It happened about 8 years ago. I was in my fourth and final year of college, and all I could think about at that time was partying. I wasn't what you would call a typical college student, as while most of my friends found a good balance between studying and partying, I spent all my time in bars, clubs, basically any place the party was. At that time, all my friends used to call me Trevor the Party Monster. I carried that title like a badge of honor as I made sure I was always the first person at every party, event, or get-together that was going on. Don't get me wrong, I didn't just party for the sake of it, and it wasn't because I didn't like to study. I partied because it made me feel free, and I was happiest whenever I was jumping up and down to some loud music with a drink in my hand. However, the freedom I felt from partying all the time turned into nothing but crippling fear after my fateful experience at the Midnight Bar. It was the 23rd of November, 2015. I'd gotten a text earlier that day saying there was going to be a lit party at the Midnight Bar. I'd been to basically every single bar in my vicinity at that point, but I'd never heard of the Midnight Bar before. I assumed it was a new place that had just opened up, and this party was their attempt to get some publicity. Since they were a new bar, I didn't really know the people behind the party, but just like every party I heard about, I didn't hesitate to go. I started my preparations by telling all my friends where the party was located. I then called my friend Jimmy, who was a DJ, and I told him to get his set ready, as I had already talked to some people to get him to play the music at the party. After that, I called my drug guy, Nash, to get some pills that we could party hard with. There were a few other things that I had to do after my calls, but soon enough, all the preparations were done, and I made my way to the Midnight Bar. The turnout was huge, as I really got the word out there. By the time I arrived, most of my friends were already there, so I joined them. We ordered shot after shot as we started to party hard. Nash had gotten us a wide variety of recreational drugs like LSD, Molly, and Angel Dust, PCP. There were also some magic mushrooms and vitamin K, ketamine. We each took a small dose of our picks to take the party to another level. I was having the time of my life at that point. The music was blaring, I had a beer in my hand, and I was dancing my heart out. I told myself that things couldn't get any better than this, but that's when I saw her. I can never forget how entranced I was by her eyes. She was beautiful. I watched her as she danced, and I admired every swish and sway her body made. It felt like I was under a spell as my body moved towards her without hesitating. When I reached where she was, I said, "Hi, I'm Trevor. I think you're beautiful." She laughed before responding with, "Hey, I'm Sandra Hale, and I know who you are. You're Trevor Mount, the party monster. Your reputation precedes you." I then smiled and said, "I didn't know drinking booze could make me famous." We both laughed at my joke before Sandra asked, "Do you want to dance?" That was all I wanted at that point, so I immediately said yes. We spent the entire party together from there. We danced, took some more shots, and party drugs. I was enjoying myself, and I could tell Sandra was also having fun. We'd really hit it off as we enjoyed the party. Now, I don't know why I did this. I'm guessing it's because I was so excited at that point, but I took my shirt off, and I kissed Sandra. She kissed me back, and it felt like I was on top of the world. I was going to kiss her again when one of my friends, Brian, who was passing by with a camera around his neck, told me and Sandra to smile for a picture. We both looked at the camera for the picture to be taken. Sandra was behind me, and I was up front. I then heard Brian say, "Smile, Trevor." But before he could take the picture, everything went quiet. For some reason, I couldn't hear the loud blaring music anymore. At first, I thought something was wrong with my ears because I was sure they didn't stop playing the music as I was just hearing it a few seconds ago. My loss of hearing wasn't the only odd thing that was happening as I realized that I couldn't move my body anymore. It felt like time had stopped for me and things just got worse from there as I watched Sandra's lower jaw expand to an inhumane level and how her now lengthy tongue rolled onto my skin. Horrified, I tried to scream, but I couldn't move my mouth. My brain tried to make sense of everything as I asked myself, why I was frozen in place, and why Sandra had now turned into something that looked like it crawled out of hell. As I felt her tongue on my skin, an unimaginable pain rippled through my body. I don't know really how to explain it, but it felt like I was dying and my life was being sucked away by Sandra's morbidly long tongue on my skin. I don't know how long it lasted, but it could have been an hour or two. Soon, everything around me started to get blurry, and eventually, it all went dark. I woke up in the hospital a few hours later, surrounded by a doctor and my friends. They told me that I'd passed out from dehydration and the mixing of hard drugs with alcohol. I was still scared of the horrific things I'd experienced, so I started to tell them what happened with Sandra, but my friend Brian, who rushed me to the hospital, told me that there was no one named Sandra at the party. Shocked, I told him that wasn't possible, and I asked Brian about the picture he took. Brian then told me that I was alone when the picture was taken. Frustrated that no one was listening to me, coupled with the fact that they were all looking at me like I was crazy, I started to scream and cry at the same time. I remember screaming the words, "She was real! Sandra was real, and she's a monster! She's a demon!" I was soon subdued and given a sedative that calmed me down. I spent another 2 days in the hospital as they wanted to check if everything was all right with my head. No one believed me. All the doctors said I'd hallucinated what I saw due to the hallucinogenic drugs I'd taken, but I knew that wasn't true. I had made sure to take the drugs in small doses during the party, so it was hard to believe that I hallucinated something that lucid. Plus, I never had an episode like this ever since I started doing recreational drugs. I told the doctors this, hoping they would believe me. And even though they confirmed that I'd taken the drugs in small doses, they told me that there was no other possible explanation to what I'd seen. My only hope now was the picture Brian took. But whenever I show the people the picture Brian had taken, they tell me that they can only see me in the image. Things just got stranger from there, as any time I look at the picture, I can still see her behind me. I don't know why I was the only one who could see Sandra in the photo, but it drove me crazy and I had to undergo some serious therapy. It's been a long time since this happened, but I still haven't forgotten that incident. I have my theories as I look into the morbid experience to prove to myself that I wasn't crazy. It was hard, but I finally found two people, a man in Slovakia and another man in Greece, who said they'd experienced something similar at a strange bar in their countries. At the end of my research, I believed the woman called Sandra Hale was a succubus, a female demon who seduces men and feeds on their life force for sustenance. And the only thing I have to prove it is this picture. I've tried time and time again to get people to believe me, but no one does, as they all say, I'm not right in the head. So I decided to put my story out there. This entire incident has also put me off parties, especially the ones held in bars. So be careful out there, as you never know if it's your favorite bar where the actual party monsters like Sandra are lurking.
The incident I'm about to narrate today is not something that happened to me. Rather, it happened with my father and my uncle. This story took place back in the 1980s, when the Vespa scooters were a rage. My father must not have been more than 25, and my uncle around 23. They didn't have cars back then, and often preferred to walk everywhere. There was a bar a few miles away from their house, where they grew up. On every weekend, either on a Saturday or Sunday, they both loved to go to the bar. However, they used to drive my grandpa's car to it, to impress the women, they said. However, one weekend my grandpa was out of town and his car wasn't available. "I think we should just walk to the bar," my dad said to my uncle.
"Yeah, we'll leave by 7. It's not that far."
That evening they both were at the bar by 8, drinking beer and playing pool. Generally, my dad drove them back, so he stopped at 2 drinks while my uncle continued. That day too, even though he didn't have to drive, he stopped after 2 drinks. He preferred being sober. That night, there were many of their friends in the bar, so they stayed later than usual and kept playing darts, pool, and chatting. Around 1 a.m., the bar was about to close, and the staff asked them and their friends to leave. They had no ride back home, so they started walking back. When they were almost halfway towards their house, in the distance, they saw a man standing in the road. He looked quite normal, except for the fact that he was standing in the middle of the road so late at night. Once my father and uncle reached the man, he literally collapsed in their arms. After taking a look at his face, my uncle recognized him.
Hey, he was at the bar with us.
What? Oh, yeah.
My dad agreed when he recognized him. Looks like he had one too many drinks. My uncle chuckled while holding the man upright.
Sir, looks like you're pretty wasted. Where should we take you?
The words that came out of his mouth were absurd.
Please, save me. My wife will kill me.
At first, my dad and uncle thought his wife would be pissed because he was so drunk. But suddenly, my dad felt something wet drip on his hand, which was on the drunk man's shoulder.
Save me, please. Help me. She will kill me. She wants me dead.
The man continued.
Oh my God, sir. You're bleeding. Are you hurt?
My dad asked when he noticed the blood dripping from the man's head. The man was in and out of consciousness, and he pointed somewhere ahead.
Wait. Looks like it's his scooter.
My uncle noticed a fallen Vespa a few yards ahead of them.
Maybe we should just make him sit there for a while and then figure out what to do.
Sounds like a plan.
They both somehow managed to haul the injured man towards his scooter. My uncle parked the scooter and then my dad made him sit on it.
Are you all right, sir? You're bleeding. Do we need to get in touch with someone?
My uncle asked while my dad fetched his handkerchief and was applying pressure to the man's wound.
Just save me. She wants me dead. She'll kill me. Look what she's done to me.
My uncle and dad were pretty confused, but they knew they had to help this poor man.
Here, just hold this cloth against your head and apply a little pressure. We don't want you to bleed out,
my dad said, then motioned my uncle to come to walk with him. They walked a few steps away from the man in his scooter and started discussing what to do with their back to the man.
He needs to see a doctor. His wound is serious. He's bleeding out.
Yeah, I get it. But how do we take him there?
I mean, I could walk back to the town and get an ambulance, but that might take an hour at least. And it's not safe for you guys to wait here.
Agreed. So what do we do?
I don't know. Can we... What the hell?
The moment my uncle turned to look at the man, he was shocked, as there was no one there. No scooter, no injured man, nothing. It was as if they both were all alone on a deserted road discussing stuff.
Where the hell did he go?
I don't know, man.
They both exchanged a meaningful look and started running toward home like madmen. Almost half a mile from home, they were so exhausted that they had slowed their pace and started walking. Neither of them had the energy or courage to say what had happened. They were drenched in sweat and terrified. Suddenly, the same man appeared in front of them, but this time his entire face was black and he looked demonic. Once again, their fight or flight response kicked in and they ran all the way home. For the next few days, no one spoke about this incident. They didn't want to even utter a word about what had happened, as they were so confused. When my grandfather returned, he instantly noticed that his two sons were behaving a little aloof. They weren't their usual cheery selves. So he asked them what was the matter. My uncle, who's the youngest one, told him everything. My grandfather then told them a story.
A long time ago, a person was murdered by his wife in our town. He somehow managed to escape on his scooter and ended up on that road in the middle of the night. However, there was no one there to help him, and due to heavy blood loss, he died from his head wound. From that time onwards, many people who walk on that path at night encounter that man. He asks people for help. I suppose you boys helped him.
Yeah, we did, or at least we tried.
Good, you helped him. Because that man's spirit is evil, and he kills anyone who doesn't help him.
Hearing that shocked both my uncle and my dad.
Next time you want to go to the bar when I'm out of town, ask one of your friends to give you a ride back home.
Don't walk all the way here. My grandfather told them. From that time onwards, they either drove to the bar or enjoyed drinks at home. But still, after so many years, they don't know that if that guy was dead, how did they see him at the bar that night?
My girlfriend and I had just gotten engaged, and we wanted to take a short road trip to celebrate. It was something we'd been talking about doing for a while, but with work and trying to find somewhere to house our pets during the short trip, we just never really got around to actually doing it. Finally, during spring of 2019, we made the plans and figured we'd drive from Southern California, where we lived, to Western Montana. My mom and dad moved to Montana after retiring, so we figured it would be the perfect place to drive to since they'd been begging us to visit for a while. We mapped out our drive and decided on the more scenic route up the 101 north, then eventually passed through Oregon, Washington, and Idaho to get to Montana. What we weren't expecting was to not even make it halfway, after the fright of our lives. The night before we left, we spent packing and talking about how excited we were to actually be getting on vacation. We decided to leave pretty early the next morning to try and get as far as possible since driving during the night wasn't something either of us wanted to do. We packed our car with our bags, then first headed to drop off our dogs at our friend's house. We made sure to tell multiple close friends and family members where we were going and how exactly we were getting there, just in case something were to happen. We weren't planning for such an event, but you hear stories all the time about people who could have been saved had they just told people where they were going to be or how long they were going to be gone. We were not going to be those people. At the time, I was 29, I'm 6'4", and I pretty regularly attend the gym. I'm not a small guy by any means, and my fiancé, on the other hand, was 23, tiny, and just under 5 feet. Safe to say that if either of us needed protecting, it would have been her. She always said having me around made her feel safer in a world where vulnerable people are preyed upon. After dropping our dogs off at our friend's house, we started the long drive up to Montana. We made some casual stops along the way, first in a small city only about an hour into the trip called Camarillo. We got some snacks and drinks at the grocery store, then hopped back into the car and we were on our way. The drive along the California coastline is one I recommend to everyone. It's absolutely gorgeous. My fiancé kept begging me to pull over to get pictures, so we weren't exactly making it as far as we had originally planned for our first day driving. What should have taken us about 6 hours to get to San Jose had eventually taken 10. We got off the freeway in San Jose and the sun was starting to set. I was tired and I knew my fiancé absolutely did not want to drive, so we settled on finding a place to eat and looking for a hotel. We drove by a sports bar and both agreed this would be a fine enough place to eat considering we were both tired and eager to get out of the car and eat real food, not just chips and soda. We pulled into the parking lot and the first thing I noticed was a large pickup truck parked right out front. Only a few other cars were in the parking lot, but we took that as a good sign, thinking the place would have been packed and we'd be able to get our food faster. We hopped out of the car and quickly locked it behind us before we walked inside. I quickly realized this wasn't your typical fun-loving football night sports bar. This was a locals-only spot. From the second we walked in, it felt like every pair of eyes in the building were on us. And not just because new people had just walked in, but because outsiders had just walked in. It had the same vibe as we had just walked in on a major drug deal. The bar itself wasn't too nice either. You know the saying, never judge a book by its cover? Yeah, well, think of that, but backwards. The outside said fun and inviting atmosphere within, but the inside said, clutch your purse and don't look anyone in the eyes or else. We sat down in the far corner of the bar and checked out the very short menu that we picked up off the counter on the way in. It consisted of nachos and hot dogs, and to be honest, we both had started to feel our appetites disappearing by the second. We were sitting directly next to a window where we could see our car parked right across the lot. Two of the men that were hanging out in the bar began whispering while occasionally glancing in our direction. I couldn't push away the uneasy feeling in my stomach telling me to get out of there as soon as possible. And just when I was about to tell my fiancé that I wanted to leave, the two men I had mentioned earlier walked out of the bar. I started to feel a little bit better, but I still really wanted to leave, and I could tell by the look on my fiancé's face that they did too. I shook my head in a way that said, "Let's go." When she looked at me with this look I'll never forget and motioned to look out of the window. I looked outside and saw the same two men grabbing a bat and crowbar from the trunk of the large pickup truck, then headed towards our car and began looking inside. I quickly whispered to my fiancé to come with me to the bathroom immediately. She never questioned me once and did exactly what I told her, which in this situation was a huge relief. We get in the bathroom and lock the door behind us, looking for any window we could make our escape through. We opened stall after stall and there was nothing we could find. And we started thinking that there'd be no way out. But the last stall all the way at the end in the corner actually had a tiny window placed just above the toilet. The only problem was there was no way I was going to fit. And I made the quickest plan in my head, and it was really the only option we had. I gave my fiancé the keys to the car and told her to climb out of the window, but only approached the car once she noticed the guys were distracted or had gone inside. I told her the second she got in the car, to start it, then meet me at the back entrance, which was only a few feet from the bathroom door we had just entered. In retrospect, we should have just gone out the back entrance to begin with, but I was a little distracted at the time. She slipped through the window, and just as she was turning the corner into the lot, she saw the guys go back inside the bar. I slightly opened the bathroom door and saw the guys questioning the other people in the bar. And the next weird part was nobody was even fazed by these two men with a bat and a crowbar standing directly next to them. Like this was some regular occurrence or something. Suddenly a person that they were talking to pointed directly at the bathroom door. I knew they saw me when they started running towards me, weapons raised and shouting at me to stay right where I was. But I was in fight or flight mode, and I chose flight. I opened the door as fast as I could and was on the back exit within seconds. Thankfully, my fiancé was there in the car waiting for me, and let me tell you, I never jumped in a car that fast in my life. She started speeding away before the door was even shut. The men had just gotten outside when we were pulling out of the parking lot, and their shouts were drowned out by the distance growing between us. The whole situation was just so incredibly fast, bizarre, and traumatizing. My fiancé and I actually just turned around and drove all the way back home. We felt we were safer in our own hometown than on the road for another 2 days, paranoid that something like this would happen again. And all I can say is that if you're ever in an area that you don't know, maybe be a little bit more cautious than we were that night.